Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10. The pass complete to his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done something. 22 to Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Rajah Bell. Hope everybody had a fantastic weekend. A lot of golf was going. We're going to get to the British Open because Tiger's back, baby. I love it.
Yep.
Pete Prisco is going to join us to talk a little NFL. It's getting closer and closer. You can almost feel it around the corner. Hannah is back. We're so glad to have
you. Welcome back, Hannah.
Yeah, and we have decided, because I'm too old to be talking about Twitter and Instagram stuff, so I think we're just going to hand everything like social to Hannah. So she's going to pop in on that in a little bit. So great to have her back. But as I mentioned off the top, Tiger is back, baby. He was back in full effect. It was funny because this is really the first time, obviously hasn't won a major in 10 years.
Right.
This was the first time where he was back in the scene with social media. And that's kind of how we consume sports now. But that to me, as I was watching, there were so many aspects of watching it yesterday that were different. But watching some of the younger crowd who hadn't seen Tiger be in the hunt on Sunday was pretty fascinating to see that unfold. But I was rooting for him, and it was a fantastic day. Overall, I think. I'm sure he's disappointed, but overall, I think it was fascinating.
Where do you stand on the will Tiger win another major?
So I was at the lowest of the lows. I thought he would never win another major, but I thought he would have another PGA Tour win.
Okay.
I thought he could get back to that. But after watching that, I feel pretty confident that he'll get another one.
Now, just because of this, the Open Championship performance, or you're talking about his body of work over this particular golf season?
All of it.
Yeah.
Both of those combined. Because I thought yesterday was a definite, positive step in his comeback. But seeing his swing, seeing his health,
right. All
of it looks like it's coming together just perfectly.
Yeah, I pull for him. I make no bones about it. I don't hide that. I'm a Tiger fan. I always have been. But I think that I'm back on. And a big part for me, I've said it before, was the issues with his health, the having to withdraw from tournaments, which is a bad look when you're not winning and you're down, you're barely making the cut, or you're not making the cut, but you had to withdraw prior to that because of the back. His back looks like it's in good shape. And you don't lose talent. You might lose your edge, that ability to get over the hump and win a tournament, and you might have to relearn how to do that, which clearly Tiger – giving up a lead, I don't know what the stats say about that, but I just don't ever remember him doing that in his heyday. You'll have to learn how to do that again, right? You're a different player. There are different psychological things that come into play now that maybe didn't come into play back then. But in terms of knowing how to play golf and what you physically were gifted with the ability to do, you don't forget how to do that. That doesn't go away, provided that you're healthy and you can make the swing and all the biomechanics of your swing are the same. So I believe now, watching him healthy, hunting, in the mix, he hasn't gotten over the hump yet, but you could see the pieces starting to come together. I'm with you, dude. I think he wins another major for sure. And I think that he's a viable, he's number 50 in the world right now. He made the Tour Championship, playoff series.
Yeah, the FedEx Cup.
The FedEx Cup, yep. Right? He made that. I think he's going to be a top 20 golfer for the next couple. I don't know how long of a shelf life this has at 42 years old with back problems, right? But having said that, over the next 3 years, I think he's a top 20 golfer.
So we're looking at the odds here for the 2018 PGA Championship, the next major that comes up. His odds, 16-1, are the same as Justin Thomas, the same as Justin Rose. Those guys are all in the top 10 in the world. Justin Thomas is ranked 2 in the world. Justin Rose is ranked 3rd. So essentially, Tiger Woods is right now a top 5 golfer in the world, the way he's playing and the way that Vegas perceives him.
Right.
And I am totally on board with that. The thing that I love about this story is I think there's a couple things. I think we forget, just because what we do by our nature, I think we forget how dominant he was.
Right.
And twice. He had really two amazing stretches. One when he hit the scene, and then he revamped his swing and then hit it again. But he was winning a third of every tournament he was entering. Whether it was a major or regular, third tournament he was winning. I think we forget that. And then I don't know if anybody understands how far he fell, not only from the mental thing and what he lost from his family and his wife and all that, but also how bad it was for him physically.
Right.
He was a guy who didn't know if he was going to play golf again. If you talk to some of his closest friends, they said he was wondering, would he ever play again? You saw it play out in tournaments where he was withdrawing and he had the yips when he went out of the Phoenix Open.
Yeah,
that was I would say the lowest of the low. And I was like, I don't know if he's ever going
to. When he was out there chili dipping and digging. Yes. Yeah, right.
It was awful. So for all of that, like, I don't know if we can truly appreciate it. Like, when I was rooting for him with you, I was rooting for him and Jordan Spieth. Like, that's what I wanted to see play out. But as I was watching him, I'm like, if he wins it, this might be one of the greatest sports moments, comebacks that I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah.
When you think about how, like, I was trying to.
That's what it felt like when I was watching yesterday. Like,
yeah,
me too.
I was like
we're watching history. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is incredible.
I was trying to, like, think of a way. Like, I don't even think it's equivalent to if Jordan had won a title with the Wizards. Like, I think because Jordan never really went away that bad and had that many struggles to deal with.
Like, yeah, he didn't hit rock bottom. Like, Tiger's been to the bottom.
Rock bottom. Yeah. And it wasn't that long ago when he was arrested just up the road in Jupiter.
Yeah.
And it was for, you know, he had drug abuse.
I mean, you're talking about rock bottom on a physical, like, on personal, on professional. Like, he's been to the bottom.
Every single angle of it is just an amazing story. And I was also curious because I don't know if there are people that are still holding all that against him. I'm sure there are. Like, and I was thinking, I'm like, who would root against Tiger?
That was the question I was going to ask you, yeah. Right? Like, what? First of all, I'm sure they're out there, but overwhelmingly, I think, like, when you're watching these galleries, like, people are out there pulling for Tiger.
Yeah.
And I don't remember, like, and I the question is why, I guess. I don't know that you have the answer for me, but how has that,
against,
like,
him?
No, why they root for him now?
Oh.
Like, why, how has it become, like, he was public enemy number one. My in-laws almost didn't talk to me for years when I supported, like, I still cheered for Tiger after all of that stuff went down. Like, it was guilt by association with them, right? So I guess my question is what has happened between then and now?
I think everybody loves comeback stories. I think we
it's
do.
As
I
simple
think America
as that.
Does, yeah. If you're contrite, if you're genuine, and I think he has been. I think he's genuinely regrets a lot of the decisions he made. I think he was heartbroken. He lost to everything. He lost his family. He was worried he wouldn't get his kids. Wouldn't be able to see him for a while.
Yeah.
Here's the way I look at Tiger, which I think is interesting. When he was winning every third tournament and he was this mythic figure, I was watching him and I was rooting for everybody else because I wanted to say, I want to see him made human, right? I want to see him get challenged. And then now I'm on the flip side.
He's
now
the underdog.
That he's been human,
he's the underdog now.
I want to see him back to that mythic figure that we saw for so long.
Yeah.
But I think it's a great story, and I think it'll continue to go.
Great for golf, dude.
Oh,
like, anytime he's there. I mean, think about the sets
totally
of eyes they were tuned in yesterday
that
wouldn't normally be if he wasn't there.
The ratings are going to be off the charts for sure. So we haven't even talked about the winner. Francesco Molinari from Italy goes out there. And if you saw his – like, I've played a lot of golf. You have too. He did what I consider is the most boring thing you can do. 18 pars. 18. Goes out there, just plays as smooth as it goes out there. Par, par, par. That's what he said he was going to do. Just kept, you know, getting par after par after par. The model of consistency. And he's apparently been playing as good as anybody's been playing. Like, in all the PGA guys, because as general golf fans, even myself, I'm pretty dialed in.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize how well he had been playing leading up to this tournament. Justin Thomas was talking about it. I played with him Thursday and Friday. He was going to go lights out. Great story for Italy, but it wasn't what I want. Like, I was kind of like, oh, like, what a boring winner. You know,
yeah.
I wanted to see some other story.
You want to see the fireworks.
But good for him. But this dude lives the life that I think all of us want to aspire to, because it wasn't that long ago he was playing with another tour pro, Wesley Bryant. And so the guy actually took notes from when he was playing with him. He said, here's his plan. He's going to retire in 2.5 years. He's going to watch sports on TV, go to the local coffee shop, have 3 cups of coffee per day, read maybe some books, and then use free Wi-Fi at places and become a Twitter troll. I have it all planned. That's his retirement plan, which I think is great.
He looks like that would be his retirement plan. Yeah. Like, when you look at him, that's what he exudes, right?
Oh,
like,
totally.
Just,
yeah.
That's fantastic.
Like, just there. I wonder, do you think he changes that retirement plan?
Nah. No, look at him, bro.
There was also a story. So he was on the bag as a caddy for his brother, who's also a really good player, like 10 or 12 years ago at the 2004 Masters, correct? Is that what I said? Is that Tebow? What year was it? 2006 Masters. He was on the bag with his brother. Like, this, there were some great stories. This one you have to dig a little bit deeper. Obviously, we knew Tiger, but this is a really cool story in of itself, that he was on the bag at the Masters, like, caddying while they're playing with Tiger. Like, I wonder if Tiger even addressed him or said anything aside from nice to meet you at the beginning of the round, and that was it.
Yeah, I was watching kind of Tiger went back into stoic Tiger mode. And I look, it's Sunday and you're in the mix, you're on top of the leaderboard. I would expect you to change your demeanor a little bit, but he wasn't laughy, jokey, like, let's have a good time this round type of Tiger.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting because Molinari looks like a bit of a I don't know. I can't say it on air. Nah. He looks like he could be a little cocky. Like,
oh yeah.
Now he keeps it cool and collected. Like he's straight down the middle. But he looks like he doesn't care who you are.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I guess you have to be that way to go out and just par every hole and birdie 18 when you're playing with Tiger under that kind of microscope.
Yep.
But I was interested to see the dynamic there. So I don't think Tiger. I don't think Tiger and he had many words going on.
No,
yesterday.
I don't think so either. So a lot of people wanted to see how the younger golfers, the guys who never were on the course with Tiger on a Sunday,
some struggles,
wanted to see how they would pan out. And there was one guy who struggled a lot. It was Jordan Spieth, who we talked a lot about. I want to get some sound from Friday on you talking about Jordan Spieth.
Okay. Once you experience, you know, one slip up at the Masters and you don't win it, mm-hmm. right? And then you have
cut at the U.S. Open.
Cut at the U.S. Open. And those doubts, like, you have to be the toughest mental nut to be able to go out there and perform on that level, on that stage against your peers, guys that are just as good as you. And when that starts, when there's like a little crack in that foundation, you wind up going through like sophomore slumps. And
yes.
That's what I would say like Jordan is. He'll figure it out. Like he's a good enough golfer. He's tough. But right now he's a little uncertain as to whether or not like he can at times. And that's just enough to let everybody else pass you up on a leaderboard.
So are you worried about Jordan Spieth after he shot a 76 on Sunday? That's 5 over par.
No.
Me neither. I'm not at all. I think again, some of it goes back to how good Tiger was and how dominant he was, that he set the bar that everybody else is going to be judged against.
Right.
And at one time, they were talking about Jordan Spieth that way. Like they were saying he could be the next Tiger. So we look at it and we're like, oh my gosh, but I'm not worried about him at all.
You know, like I know, golf is one of those games where you can have a bad shot or maybe like a bad result on a hole, maybe not even a bad shot, just like a putt that doesn't go. You can get on tilt so quick and it can cost you 4 residual strokes, like just because you're not locked in. And so of all the games, like one bad round in golf isn't gonna get me off your team, you know,
right.
What I mean?
Oh,
like I'm with you. I think you're talented enough. You've seen him in action where he does figure it out. You know, right now there's clearly a little uncertainty there. I think he more than anybody is one of those guys that probably, all right, so like the Rory McIlroys of the world, like those guys, I think they want to beat Tiger. Like, I don't think they revere Tiger.
Right.
Like, they know that Tiger was a boss, but they're like, yo, I'm better than Tiger. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a young American golfer. I think he's got a little reverence for Tiger. So I think he, more than anybody, when those roars and stuff were going off, might have been affected. I'm giving him that one to – that's a pass for me.
Yeah, and he talked about it. He said, I've always wanted to have this moment. So it is something. He grew up, like, much like Tiger grew up with the posters of Jack and mm-hmm. all that, he probably grew up with posters of Tiger and said he wanted to do it. And I would ask this to anybody who's worried about Jordan Spieth. Well, are you worried about Dustin Johnson? Are you worried about Jordan Spieth? Like, are you worried about it? Like, I mean, excuse me, are Justin Thomas, like guys who missed the cut?
Right.
I'd rather be in Jordan Spieth's shoes, who had an incredible tournament and just didn't play well
for sure
on Sunday, than any of those guys. All right, let's get to You Have to See It, where our boy Phil Mickelson was rocking his new look, as he always does. I mean, he's trying to change the game.
You have to
see
it. So
he's got the button down, all white, which isn't flattering color as it is.
Really, what are you doing? I don't love that. That can't be comfortable to play golf in that.
No, it can't be. Now, I've had one of these Mizen and Main shirts before. They are kind of an athletic.
I don't care.
Right. I don't either. They're not a good look.
I mean, what is that? Is that like a stretch, like
it's
dry,
like,
wicking material? That's not your basic Oxford, like
No, it's not. It's
like, button down?
Right. It's not your typical cotton Oxford, but it is it's not a good look for our boy there. And I don't know.
Look.
You gotta be in shape if you're gonna pull off that look too. That's the other thing.
Just generally. But that's not like that. We're playing golf in long sleeve, like Oxford type of shirts, just is not a comfortable thing. Like that, those shirts grab in all the wrong places when you're trying to swing a club.
I can't even wear with a rain jacket on. Man. I don't like it either. All right, let's get to our Have to Hear It, where this is fantastic. Eddie Pepperall, who was playing in the British Open, this is great, had an excuse for one of his rounds, but then he actually found something that might have worked.
All right.
You have to hear it.
I was a little hungover, I won't lie. I had too much to drink last night, and I was so frustrated with yesterday that today was really, I'm not going to say a write-off, but I didn't feel like I was in the golf tournament, and whether I shot 69 or 73 today, I wouldn't have, you know, it wouldn't have been heartbreaking.
Oh, look, so great. When you have nothing to lose.
Right.
Right? You loose. You yes. just go out there and you play golf or whatever you're doing.
You know what's funny? The first time I saw that, I thought it was another one of those dudes, like the impressionist.
Yeah,
saw that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I thought
yeah.
it was a bit. Like, I thought it was a joke. But he's a real golfer who goes out there, plays bad, so he gets hammered, comes back, and follows it up with a 67.
Some of my best, like, practices, I'm not going to say, like, games. Some of my right. best practices, like, in college and stuff, came after nights of just getting, like, absolutely hammered. And, like, you come in there and you just know that you have to be on point. Like, you're making up. You know you didn't do right last night, so you got to be, like, extra dialed in. And so, like, sometimes that can work to your benefit.
Oh, absolutely it can. David Wells famously had the no-hitter after he was out, like, on some bender, like, was all night long. He comes out and throws a no-hitter, or a perfect game even better than that, over the Yankees. Maybe that's what we need to do next time we go out and play golf. We'll just have to have a good night out the night before, and then we'll go low the next day. All right, let's move on because we got to get a lot of stuff too in the show. We got Pete Prisco coming up. Johnny Manziel's on the move in Canada. Did you know that?
I did not know
that. Yeah, he's on the move, and we have Summer Reading, my favorite segment of the entire summer with Raja. That's coming up next on Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Raja Bell. All right, welcome back to Off the Bench with Cannell and Bell. This is my favorite segment. It's where you get to read a little bit.
Get my tea.
So the deal is Summer Reading with Raja. It takes place every Monday, and we read excerpts from the book 7 Seconds or Less by Jack McCallum. Now we get to the good stuff. We've already had a lot of good stuff, but this is the clothesline chapter. So what do you got for us?
This is what you've been waiting for. You've been tuning in the whole time.
Yes, this is it.
All right, so here we go. This is apparently, Jack says, this is right before the clothesline. When Bell complains to a referee near the Laker bench that Bryant was not whistled for an elbow, he hears a comment from Phil Jackson that includes the words, deserve it. Bell has to restrain himself from going at Jackson.
Do you remember that specific instance when you hear Phil Jackson say this?
Yeah, it's not crystal clear, but I do remember the exchange, and I do remember, like, having a lot of, like, beef with Phil Jackson. He was one of those dudes that liked to talk to
you. He was a chirper. He was chirping from at the players.
Yeah, you know, he's all this head game stuff. Yeah. And so, like, he'd always be over there running his mouth, and yeah.
A lot of coaches like that? Because I've always been like, hey, you can go after the refs, you can go after your own players, but coaches – like, other team is off limits. Like, because you can't really do anything to him. Like, you can't fight him. You can't go up. You can't foul him hard.
I know.
You can't do anything to him. So I always felt like that was off limits.
I typically, as a coach, I don't, even when I'm coaching kids, I don't like my coach, I don't like the other coaches to talk to my kids.
Right.
Like, you could talk to your players and cheer or whatever, but don't talk to my kids. Quick story before I go into the more reading. So let's pause. I was in Arizona, 1999, playing in the Arizona Lake Invitational Tournament with FIU. Lute Olson. A ball went down to the ground and we were, like, in a scrum, and he called me, like, a thug or something like that. Like, and it wasn't like that. Like, we were just, but he was one of those, you have no business in here playing against my team. We're the Wildcats, whatever. He said something and I was like, coach, it wasn't like, and he said something back. And I called him an old redneck. The whole place started booing me. The whole place started booing me. All right. Anyway, so here we go. This is post game after the clothesline. As Bell gets dressed, Tim Thomas says with a big smile, don't be a bitch to the media now. They tell me that's my only chance, says Raja. I understand, says Thomas. Go be a bitch then. I'll forgive you in the morning.
What was the majority of the guys in your – they must have loved it. Like, your teammates must have loved it.
I think that they were really, really surprised. They couldn't imagine that I would have put us in that precarious situation because nobody knew, like, exactly what was going to happen to me, how long the suspension. But I think deep down most of them loved it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so this is Barbosa having to replace Raja in the starting lineup for Game 6. That's the context here. So there's a saying around the league that the more money you make, the less you take a charge. But that doesn't apply to Bell. After finally getting a good contract that at least one pundit termed the worst of the summer.
Messed up.
Jesus. Bell threw his body around like a Hollywood stuntman. Oddly, he became known as both a tough guy and a flopper. As to the latter, Bell prefers to say that he's merely emphasizing a call that should be made.
I love it. But I think the one thing I take from this, do you think a lot of guys, once they get the contract, they change significantly the style of play? Like, will they be more cautious with their body? Will they not play as hard?
It depends on how.
I would actually admire that more about you, like, and I already do, but, like, the fact that you got paid and it didn't affect the way you were played because you always played that way.
Yeah, it depends on how you're built. There's some guys, yes, that will play in the contract year. Once they get the money, everything changes. But if you're built to, like, scrap and claw and you're the underdog, it won't change when you get the money.
Right.
Might change when you're, like, an 18-year vet or something and you don't want to get hurt. But
all right, good stuff. I like that.
All right, so that was – Yeah. What's that, summer reading?
Yeah, let's right. move to so let's read move. And react.
There we go. Read and react. So this is Johnny Manziel sent to Montreal in a 5-player deal. After spending just 5 games with 0 starts as a part of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, the former Heisman Trophy winner was traded to the Montreal Alouettes.
Good for him. He had a good coach, June Jones, yeah. Who was like runs a really great system. He's a longtime coach at Hawaii, was at SMU, but he's got a quarterback there in Jeremiah Masoli, who's doing pretty well.
Is that so the kid from Oregon?
Yeah. He was out at Ole, and then transferred to Ole Miss. Like, okay. He kind of had a different path to get to where he is. But great for Manziel to be able to get there. June Jones said, I've been pleasantly surprised the last 3 weeks what a good teammate he is, how smart he is, how he sees the game. He should be playing in the NFL, and I believe he will when he gets through with us, talking about the Canadian Football League. But I'm pretty sure he has to play 2 years. Yeah, he is still locked into a 2-year deal that will keep him in Canada till 2020. But at least now he'll get to play.
Right.
He'll have an opportunity to get on the field, to hone his craft, and get film out there so that NFL teams can evaluate him, can see him, can see the way he's playing, even though it's a totally different game. But good for him to finally get to play. But this does suck for him. Like, it's a like getting traded in Canada, moving again after he's made this decision. But, you know, again, a comeback story, much like Tigers. Hopefully he can get all the way back.
What do you know about Montreal?
I flew through there once to get Toronto.
You're all right. No, I don't know.
That's all I know.
All right. So there's a report out there. A Chinese team is set to offer Dwayne Wade a monster deal, currently an unrestricted free agent. The report from Sportando says the Chinese team Zhangjiang of the Flying Tigers are prepared to make a monster offer. Wade is currently in China after signing a lifetime shoe deal with Li-Ning.
All right. What would it take? What would it take you to go to China?
At that point, like right now, like for me, I go to China.
Right, exactly. Me too.
We'll you name it. Let's go.
We'll go through the podcast from China.
I would imagine.
But if you were like for
15 mil probably.
For D-Wade or
yeah,
for you?
For me, I'd go for a single mil. Right. But no, I think anything north of like anything in the 15 mil and north range, I think
D-Wade goes. What about, so what I'm trying to get to is what is the difference? Like, let's say, because he could probably make 10, don't you think, somewhere here?
I think it's going to be hard for him. I think it's going to be hard for him to make 10 million now.
All right, so what if it, like, is it
especially
double?
With the Heat, like, where else is he going to go at this point? Like, he came back to the Heat.
Right.
Like he got traded home, and now it's all way away. We're back home. It's Wade County. Like, where can he go? And
would
the Heat ain't paying
double?
Him.
Would it be double? Would it have to be the number? You'd have to make double in China?
Yeah, probably. Here's I think I because it. I think 15 represents at like double, or like if he's gonna make 5 here, like triple maybe.
Yeah, if you're D Wade, here's what I would do. So if he's listening, here's the advice. I would play one more year here for cheap, and then go. Like, I think China will always be there, just because. I mean, maybe he can even say it's his last year and have like that send off.
Yeah, okay.
He'll have one more run. He's sentimental. Kids, you know, he doesn't have to move him out there, and then go to China for the big payday. Because he spends, I don't know, I follow him on Instagram, so I see a lot of, he's always in China. He's
right.
Got a shoe over there, which is not real popular here.
Right. They love it over in there. China.
Yeah. If you've seen it, you'll know why it's not too popular here.
They're talking about Udonis possibly going too. Yeah, it'd be interesting.
They were working out. Maybe it's a package deal.
Well, all right. Here, we went from 15 mil to 80 mil. The report is that Tobias Harris turned down an five-year, $80 million extension from the Clippers. He decided to bet on himself and become an unrestricted free agent next summer. He was a key piece in that Blake Griffin to Detroit deal.
I love it, seeing guys bet on themselves, but I'm always like, oh boy, I hope it goes well. I hope you're right. It wasn't that long ago, and now this is a different circumstance, but Isaiah Thomas, we were talking about him being a $200 million guy.
Yeah.
What he just signed, like, it was not a good deal, and it was for, like, a hundredth of what he would have gotten. Like, it wasn't even close. Yeah, it wasn't a tenth. It was a hundredth of what he could have gotten. So hope it works out.
So here's the deal with Tobias Harris. He's a really good player, about 19 points a game. Skilled, like, super big three, small four probably in today's NBA. And when you look at what other people are out there making and you compare skill sets, like, you're probably worth more money than that.
Yeah.
The problem with the NBA is timing. So
right.
Essentially what you're saying is, like, I'm betting on the timing being a lot better for my skill and my skill set next summer. The problem with that is, like, there are a lot of variables in play out there in LA. Like, you guys are going to be a bad team, which speaks to you being able to score the ball.
Yeah.
You're going to get all the shots you want. But I think he's been injured just about every year he's played in the NBA. There's a little turbulence there in the front office and with the coaching staff. And all of those are things that, like, could really derail a campaign to try to make 25 million a year. So, like, good luck, because I like Tobias. I got to watch him play in high school a little bit. I know him, and so I'm cheering for him. Yeah. But always a big risk when you're betting on yourself.
Yep.
All right. So maybe my reaction to that was an overreaction. Could have been a proper reaction.
Right.
We're gonna move to another segment now called overreaction or proper reaction. All right. So the Lakers finally made their first good postseason, post-LeBron move of the offseason by signing Michael Beasley. So you're discounting the Rondo and the JaVale McGee. This is the first good move that they've made since the LeBron move.
Well, I think, yeah, look at it all. I think obviously that's an overreaction because they have made a lot of other moves, but I don't think it's as much of an overreaction statement than you would think because it's actually pretty good value. And when you consider Lance Stevens had said he still hasn't even spoken to LeBron, he doesn't even have his phone. Like, yeah. where is that going down? It's an overreaction, but I don't think it's as much of an overreaction as everybody think. But this roster is like the vagabonds of the NBA. Like, this is a weird roster when you look at it. I think it could be a total train wreck when it all gets put together, but
Yeah, this is a lot of personality in one room. But what they're doing is they're just supplementing with pieces that are proven. Like, Michael Beasley can score the ball. Lance Stevens is tough, can score the ball. JaVale McGee has value in today's NBA as a rim run. Rajon Rondo is still really, really good guard. None of these guys in your long-term plan with those Lakers, but in this one year where you couldn't get the long-term answers, you're putting, and again, to LeBron, this has to say, you know, like, yeah, you've got my back. Like, I'm glad that I came here and trusted your word, because they're putting all of the bullets in the chamber that they could put in this
year.
They're
going to fire him all this year so it's empty.
That's right. And they can go out and get him up.
That's a smart move.
Ohio State won't win the Big Ten this year. Overreaction or proper reaction?
I wish there was a middle reaction because I don't think it's an overreaction, but I don't think it's the proper reaction. Like, if you look at it, they were the favorite to the pick to Big Ten Media Days by the Big Ten Media. I actually don't like them. I don't know if I'll pick them because
right.
I think it's the toughest conference in all of college football, the Big Ten is. I think you've got challenges in Penn State who people are overlooking. Michigan has supposedly, you know, ready for prime to have this breakout year, and Michigan
sure.
State's always good. So I think it might be one of these survival of the fittest types years. And with replacing JT Barrett, I know they like Dwayne Haskins a lot as quarterback, but you had the model of consistency there
right.
with JT Barrett the last few years. There's always a learning curve. I don't care how good you are. And I just wonder if there will be a one or two slip-ups for him that cost him a Big Ten championship.
So the Big Ten Media Day kicks off today in Chicago. Yep. The question I have is it the best conference in the nation this year?
Yes, without question. If you go as far as...
Did you already answer that? And I'm like sitting here reading
But no, but I'll tell you why. Because I look at it this way. You have to have national championship contenders. They have two, maybe three. You have to have depth, which they're getting better. And they're really, their bottom tier has gotten significantly better with addition of coaches like Scott Frost in Nebraska. Purdue has been a lot better. So they kind of have all of the requirements to be considered the best conference.
Apologies with my multitasking.
No, that's all right.
We'd already answered that. But anyway, coming up next, the Big Ten Player of the Year for the past two seasons. He's now a well-paid member of the New York Giants. We chat with Pete Prisco on expectations for Saquon Barkley and more from NFL training camp. Stay tuned on Off the Bench with Kanell and Bell.
Bam. All right, welcome back to Off the Bench with Danny Kanell and Rajah Bell. Let's welcome in our buddy Pete Prisco. He's a CBS Sports senior NFL writer, our buddy here on CBS Sports HQ. What's up, Pete? How you doing this morning?
What's up, guys? How are you?
Fantastic. How long have you been covering training camps? Do you have a number, like how many camps you've covered?
Oh, my. I mean, it's usually been between, let's see, 12 to 15 to 16, 17 a year for probably, well, since I've been in this job since 2000. Other than that, I used to do the Jaguars training camp every year, and boy, were they an entertainment option. Think about this, guys. In Jacksonville's first training camp in 1995, they went to Stevens Point, Wisconsin, because they thought it was going to be cool up there, and trained for 6 weeks, starting on July 6th.
Jeez. July 6th.
That is absolutely insane. And it's a lot of what the players have actually used as their leverage,
yeah.
is stuff like that, less training camp. So not only the time, but how much have training camps changed from a media perspective? Like, all of it together. Like, how much has it changed over the past two decades?
Well, I think the biggest change is there's no two-a-days. I mean, you know, back in the day, they'd have a morning practice and in full pads and beat the daylights out of each other and then come back in the afternoon and have an afternoon practice in full pads and come back the next day and do it. And I mean, training camp used to be where you beat guys up and you tried to weed out guys, but it also was a time where guys were getting in shape. You didn't have these year-round workouts and guys spending money to go to these, you know, workout facilities in the off season. So it was much different options back then. But let me tell you, some of those training camp practices, they used to be so physical. They used to have the middle drill, the 9-on-7 drill, where they line up and pound the ball, and you could do nothing but run the football. And those were as violent as anything you would see. You don't see that anymore. That's the biggest change.
The best part about it is all of this is what you're saying, Pete, is basically camp has become like it was for me throughout my career as a quarterback. So basically you're seeing everybody treated like quarterbacks always were. So that's just kind of where we are now, which is, I think, why we see a lot of problems with guys struggling with tackling and stuff.
Fantastic. Yeah, and you know what? Here's the other part of it. Because they aren't, they don't have that much time anymore. It's all about install now. So The little things, the techniques of the position, the tricks of the trade that you need to learn, you don't get taught those anymore. And that's why I think you see a lot of these guys going to, like, Chuck Smith, his pass rushing academy, or Charles Bentley's O-line academy. They do that stuff, and now you're getting the DBs together to do their thing. I think that's why you're getting more of that, because you don't get taught the little tricks of the trade. You go in, and it's install, 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 and off you go.
So, Pete, as you get around to a bunch of these training camps, like, what are a few of the stories that are really piquing your interest?
Well, I mean, first, I'm going to Atlanta this week, and will Julio Jones show up? I mean, that's first and foremost for me. I mean, obviously, he's, you know, wants a new deal. He saw what Matt Ryan got. He saw some of the landscape of the wide receivers in the NFL in terms of free agency, and he wants a new deal. And reality is, he signed a new deal 2 years ago. I mean, if you're the Atlanta Falcons, you can't just go up ripping up deals to allow these guys, you know, 2 years in to get a new deal. So I think they've already said they're not going to give him a new deal. The question becomes, will Julio show up? And we know they need him. They know that he is needed. But the question is, will he show up? I think he eventually shows up. Julio's a smart guy. He's also made a boatload of money off the field, from what I was told, in a lot of businesses. So I don't think he needs the money. It's just a principal thing for him.
Yeah, I think so, too. I blame Rajah and these NBA guys for all these NFL holds, because we're seeing more and more guys threaten holding out these training camps. It's going to be interesting to watch, because he's not the only one who's out there saying he's not going to report, and it's going to get interesting for a lot of teams.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I was in the locker, in the NFL locker room one day, and the guy had this magazine featuring all these major mega houses, and he was flipping through it. I said, what do you got there? He goes, I got a magazine. I go, oh, that's a nice one. You might be able to get it. He goes, no, here's the pages with the NBA houses. And then he flipped over and he said, here's the pages with the NFL houses. There's a big difference.
I guarantee it was Rob Report, because That was the one in every
everybody's
locker room.
Everybody's locker.
Oh, yeah. Great for the Rob Report, too, to put those out there. Probably got a lot of sales in them, too. So a guy who doesn't need a new contract is Saquon Barkley, because he just got a four-year deal, $31.2 million guaranteed, $15 million over $20 million signing bonus was paid out immediately. I'm all in on Saquon Barkley. I thought it was the right pick for the Giants to make at number two overall. How much of an impact do you think he's going to make his rookie season?
By the way, I hated the pick. I don't think you draft running backs that high. That's me. I've never been a big believer in taking running backs in the top 10 because look at the landscape last year. Kareem Hunt, third round. Alvin Kamara, third round. I mean, you could find those guys, which is part of the reason why Le'Veon Bell's probably not getting the contract he wants. But I do like Barkley. I think as a player, he's a special player. I just think the value of the position has, you know, deteriorated. And so from that standpoint, that's why I wouldn't take him. I do like him as a player. I think he's a heck of a football player. Can run it, can catch it, can block. I mean, he'll block you on those blitz pickups, which, you know, Danny, you have to be able to do if you're a young running back. So I think it's a good pick from a, you know, how talented he is. I just don't think it's a great pick from a value position.
And let me ask you about another rookie quarterback, Josh Rosen, out there in Arizona. He's got a whole lot of ideas about, you know, fixing NCAA football.
He's a genius.
He is a genius.
He's got all the answers.
Yeah, but
I'll tell you about him too.
Does he get a shot in Arizona this year? And can he help fix them?
Well, you know he's going to get a shot because Sam Bradford never finishes the season. So that's going to be A, he's going to get to play. But I know a lot of guys out there, and they are raving about the kid. I mean, the bottom line is he stepped in. And, you know, there were always questions about the attitude, how would he fit in with his teammates. They supposedly love him as well. He's a junkie. He's grasped the offense already. He's smart. He just has that feel of an NFL quarterback. And I'll be honest with you, there were a lot of guys leading into the draft that had questions about that kid. I think he answered a lot of those in the offseason in Arizona. I do think he's going to play this year. It's just a matter of when. It wouldn't shock me if it's, you know, the first month that they get off to a slow start, he's in there because he has that type of ability.
I got a question for you. Now, from a financial standpoint, I think the answer is really obvious. But which quarterback of these two I'm going to give you has more pressure on him this season? Is it Kirk Cousins in Minnesota, or is it Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City?
Oh, I think it's Kirk Cousins. I mean, look, this year is kind of like with Patrick Mahomes, and I actually got a piece coming out of him. I spent some time with him in May. With Mahomes, if what do you expect from him? It's a first-year starter, so whatever you get is kind of gravy. Yeah, he's replacing Alex Smith, but this is a long-term situation. I think he's going to play very well, by the way, but I think it's a long-term situation. For me, it's about Kirk Cousins. I mean, you make all that money. You got a ready-made team that went to the championship game last year. You got to get that team at least back to the championship game and maybe, you know, obviously even further to the Super Bowl, maybe even win it. So I think that question is easy. It's definitely for me, it's Kirk Cousins.
All right, so you had a situation last year with Patrick Mahomes and Alex Smith, and right now in Baltimore, there seems to be another kind of situation like that playing out where you have, you know, Joe Flacco, but then you've got Lamar Jackson drafted in the first round waiting in the wings. What can you talk a little bit about that situation and how you see that playing out?
Yeah, look, this is a good situation for the Ravens because it's going to light a fire and supposedly has lit a fire under Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco, you know, is very even-keeled, and some people say, you know, where's the fire in the belly? He won the Super Bowl and he had that great year, got the good contract, but the fire in the belly isn't there. Supposedly this has helped light that fire in the belly, which is a good thing. You know, also in fairness to Joe Flacco, he had nothing. I mean, look at his run game. It was non-existent. You look at his wide receivers, they were terrible. You look at the tight end position, it wasn't very good. So now they beefed that up a little bit. The offensive line should be better with Yanda back in the lineup. So I think this is an opportunity for him to play. But they have to know, he has to know, that you draft Lamar Jackson because he's the future. And when does that future come? Is it sometime during this season? Is it sometime after the season? I think ideally they'd like it to be after the season, and then he takes over next year. But you never know. And you know, Flacco has gotten hot at the right times. I mean, look at his playoff record. The guy's been phenomenal in the playoffs. He seems to get it going when he feels a little bit of the pressure and the heat. So maybe this will get him going, and maybe they don't play Lamar Jackson next year. But, you know, when you have a big contract, and that's the thing, guys. In Kansas City, when I was out there talking to Andy Reid and Brett Beach, the general manager, the one thing that they said is they loved Alex Smith. But when you move on from the quarterback position, that gives you a cheap contract at the quarterback position and allows you to do other things with the football team. So I think from that standpoint, you have to keep an eye on that in Baltimore as well.
No doubt about it. All right, let's finish off like we always do, a little superlatives here with Pete Prisco. All right, Pete, so these are kind of rapid fire, but I'm interested to hear some of your answers on these. All right, the most accommodating training camp team that you've covered.
Well, for me, it's Jacksonville. I've been around there for decades, so they, you know, I'm like the old grandpa that rolls in, and they treat him very well because they don't want to offend me. So for me, it's Jacksonville. But there's a lot. I mean, the Atlanta Falcons are accommodating as heck. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are. I try to go to teams that accommodate me.
Yeah.
I mean, the Cardinals have always been great to me. The Rams, the Chargers. I don't go to teams that aren't accommodating, and that's therefore I don't go to New England. And it's nothing against Stacey James, the PR guy, but they have so many people there, and it's just so hard to get anything. So rapid fire, not rapid fire, but that's my answer.
If New England's the worst, who's the second worst as far as accommodation?
Detroit used to be bad, but they've had a changeover in their staff. So I don't know how, you know, this year will be different, but they've never been that accommodating either.
All right, accommodations aside, what's the worst training camp site?
The worst training camp site? Well, you know, for me, it's when I got to get in a car and drive somewhere a long ways. And, you know, I once drove from Anderson, Indiana to Bourbonnais, Chicago, Illinois, which is where the Bears are. And I was actually on a two-lane road, and I looked over, and I swear I was in some farmer's driveway. I mean, that's how bad that was. And there's cornfields, and you get there, and you go, I'm in Illinois? It looks like I'm in the middle of Kansas or Iowa or something. So Bourbonnais is, for me, that's kind of one I don't like. I didn't like going to.
All right, there you go. Good stuff, Pete. Hey, thanks for getting up early for us, all right?
All right, guys, take care.
All right, you got it. Follow Pete on Twitter, at PriscoCBS, and check him out here all the time on CBS Sports HQ. Let's get on to Refresh with Hannah.
Johnny Manziel will get a chance to play. The Hamilton Tiger Cats traded their backup quarterback to Montreal on Sunday in a five-player trade. Manziel will play for first-year Montreal coach Mike Sherman, who recruited him to Texas A&M in 2011 as the Aggies head coach. And Dwayne Wade made his emotional return to the Miami Heat at the trade deadline last season, but the reunion could potentially be short-lived. According to a report, a Chinese team is set to offer D-Wade a monster deal. He's an unrestricted free agent and is currently in China after just signing a lifetime shoe deal. All right, so Danny, you talked about this earlier in the show. I am officially taking over Socially Relevant because I can talk about that. And
yes,
we're just going to let the dads listen to this one.
All right, good.
All right, so the first one up, this video is so good. So this is an Alabama fan, and he's the groom here in this situation. He thinks he's getting this Tide-themed cake. You can see he's really excited about it. He's stopping. He's taking pictures. He thinks this is his show. But what he doesn't know is that his bride, an LSU fan, surprised him with a purple and gold cake inside of this. There we go.
God, love it. This video is so fantastic. And the thing, like, if you listen to it from start to finish and you hear how much smack he's talking about Roll Tide and all that stuff, it's even better to see his reaction. But you know what would make it even better? If LSU would win every 6 or 7 years, like if they'd win a little bit more often in this rivalry.
Just not against the Hurricanes in September.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
I love the rivalry, though. That's such a good move by the bride. Like, I support that all the way.
That is fantastic.
All right, another video that you guys just have to see. This one is Gordon Hayward. He is back in the gym, and he's looking pretty good. We all know he went down last season, and so far it seems like everything is rolling for him. What do you guys think of this video?
No, he looks good. He looks good. He's not doing a whole lot of, like, hard planning and stuff off that left leg. I'm sure he's still taking it pretty, you know, he's taking the precautions necessary. But seeing him moving like this, it's a variety of different shots and step backs. Like, that's nothing but good.
A lot of step backs.
Yeah.
Do you think that's on purpose, though, to kind of protect the knee?
I think he's trying to that in and of itself is a test for that ankle and stuff like that. But you just don't see a whole lot of bounce or pop, which is probably going to take a while to come back.
Right. Totally normal. Good stuff, Hannah. I'm glad we got her in there with Socially Relevant. All right, coming up next, no one got fired, so we're going to talk Jimmy G again, all right?
My guy.
We made it through that. We were careful with our conversation. Back in the news, me and his girl. That's coming up next on Off the Bench with Kennell and Bell. Welcome back to Off the Bench. Let's finish it off like we do every single day with some topics. Debo, what do you got for us?
Danny, we can't play sound from the British Open, but thankfully we have comedian Connor Moore to help us out once again with some golfer impressions.
Hit some bad shots, and feel my game's ready now for the Open Championship next week, man.
Dustin, that was the Open Championship.
Huh? I thought that was the British Open.
Tiger, so close yet so far, it just wasn't meant to be.
Oh, man, I thought I played well this week. I really did, and, you know, it was pretty close. But, you know, thing wouldn't bite, you know?
Bite.
That is great. I think this dude is the best hire that in any media company has made that the Golf Channel made with him. The dude gives great content.
He's fantastic. Yeah. But the beard, like the red beard, like that just... Made out of clay? What was that? Like made out of like some earthy clay?
I can't wait to see as he expands his repertoire too. Like when you see, like I can't wait to hear Ricky Fowler.
Which one's better, the DJ or the Tiger?
I like the DJ. I think the DJ is so spot on because it also kind of takes a shot at him. Like them.
Yeah.
The guy is not the brightest cat out there.
Oh, bless his heart.
All right. The internet is great because it allows us to see incredible feats that we otherwise wouldn't. The internet sucks because sometimes we have to determine whether things are real or fake. And that was the case with this dunk over the weekend, which had the internet abuzz, and deservedly so. But do we think it's legit? Watch this replay.
So we're trying to see if it's photoshopped. Yeah, it did look like super, like it looked like one of those Super Balls.
A little hitch at the end. Fast.
Yeah, I wonder if that's a real ball. That's fake.
That's fake.
Yeah, I got up there too quick.
Full speed,
yeah, I got up there too quick.
Fake. The slow-mo makes it look real, but it's definitely fake.
All right, just pretend that it was real. How would it compare to this other one that we saw a few weeks ago? Never saw Raj's reaction to this.
Oh!
Yeah. Make the three.
Yeah.
Catch it out of the net.
That is difficulty on a lot of levels there. You got to bank a three from an angle.
And he brought it through the legs after the catch.
Yeah, that's sick. That's dope.
That one's better.
Yep. That one's better. Definitely better.
Didn't a dude try the one where he tried to dunk it like this? He tried to do some weird
motion. To like butterfly it in there?
Yes, in the dunk contest. It's all about doing something nobody's seen.
That throwing it down, jumping, and dunking it it's almost impossible. I haven't seen anybody.
Yeah. How about some other things that might be photoshopped? And that's this photo of Kawhi Leonard smiling. We see like two teeth, but we'll count it. That's a smile.
This has got to be a great sign if you're a Raptors fan, because for a while there, we talked about it. I didn't know if it was going to happen. The fact that he's there, like getting the roll out, the red carpet. I will say this. There was a report out. One of his close friends supposedly said they think he could potentially fall in love with Toronto. I want to know if it was the same close friend who said he has no interest in playing in Toronto. Like, these rumors that are coming around are out of control.
That's equivalent to, like, the San Antonio Spurs small font thanking Kawhi. Like, the I'm going to smile in my first photo op in Toronto. I haven't smiled here in 7 years.
That's a good call.
So Aaron Rodgers is going to be signing a new contract soon. A lot of reporters are going to be angling for that scoop. The guy that's going to break the news is Aaron Rodgers' good friend and former teammate James Jones, who's now an NFL Network analyst. Rodgers says that he will tell Jones before he tells anyone else. My question to you guys is, did you guys have someone within the media that you would, that was your go-to guy?
Nobody cared what I thought for the most part, so it didn't really. No. Oh, Scoobs.
But did guys come to you and ask you stuff all the
time? Yeah, I had a lot of guys. Like Mark Stein is a good buddy of mine. Like Rick Bucher. A lot of those guys would reach out to me and to get info, because like I was cool with all of them. You know what I mean? I wanted to do
they
that.
They all try to be your buddy, though.
Yeah.
They all want to try to get in so they can be that guy.
Sure.
Jay Glazer was just starting his career like locally in New York, and obviously he's exploded now. He was huge with Fox. He's like one of the best, you know, NFL insiders that are out there. And I remember going to dinner with Michael Strahan and his wife and me and my girlfriend at the time. And Strahan's like, yeah, meet us out. We're going to go to this place in New York. I'm like, cool. I'm like, who's going? He's like, oh, we got a couple people going. And then Glazer was there, and I'm like, what are we doing? Like, you didn't hang with reporters like that. But Glazer kind of was best friends with Strahan and kind of worked that into other relationships. And that's what it's all about. Like, you build up these relationships. Now he does it through his workout place. He's, like, got a facility out in L.A. A lot of dudes work out there, so he gets their numbers, says, hey, hook me up. But very cool that Aaron, like, hooks up his old – like,
that's totally
a pretty unique perspective. But – should be careful your agent isn't floating it out there to some other insider.
Yeah.
Danny, you want to talk relationships? Last episode, you started with Jimmy G. Today, we end today's podcast with a Jimmy G update. TMZ caught up with the adult film actress, Kiara Mia, he went out with, and asked her about the night. She said, quote, what I will say is this. Jimmy and I had an amazing dinner, and he treated me with so much respect and class. And honestly, we're friends. But she also added, the 49ers will win the Super Bowl this season because, quote, everything she touches turns to gold.
All right. First of all, Devo, you are fired because we don't have the video for saying that on TMZ. I know we probably don't have rights, but we should have just played it anyway. This to me, again, why this was such a dumb decision for Jimmy Garoppolo. The fact that she's out there on TMZ now, yapping, running her mouth about it, talking about the date, like insinuating stuff that went on. This was an IQ test, and he failed.
Let Jimmy G live, bro. Jimmy G ain't hurting nobody, man. Like let that man live.
Oh, it's all about optics, I guess. Well, we're going to get some more because, I don't know, is there going to be a second date? Now all his teammates are going to get a bass about this. But next time we talk about this story, we're going to have video. We're going to have B-roll rolling.
There we go.
Everybody can get a decent look at Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe. Or whoever's talking. All right, that's a wrap for us. Again, remember, 5 days a week this week, as we are from now on, from here on out. We'll be on video pretty soon, too. We'll have an announcement about that soon. And as always, make sure you go follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Kinnell and Bell.